ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
This podcast is recorded on the lands of the Awabakal, Darug, and Eora people. I love the Olympics. And when the news broke that the 2032 Olympic Games were going to be held in Queensland...
Brisbane, Australia.
I think I and a lot of other people had preemptive shivers with memories of Sydney and Kathy Freeman and Thorpe and Fatso and Nikki Webster coming flooding back. That was nearly 3 years ago now. And since then, things have not been going particularly well.
It has been half-assed.
Plans for new or refurbished stadiums have been drawn up, then scrapped, with very little progress being made. There are concerns that Brisbane is going to blow its budget.
The Senate inquiry heard of potholes of lost opportunities and fears of white elephant venues.
It's so bad that in March, Nine News reported that the Queensland government had sought advice on what it would cost to scrap the games, though the government denies this. But this isn't the first time the Olympics has been in this sort of trouble. 50 years ago, the Olympics suffered a financial disaster so massive it found itself on the verge of death. Is Brisbane repeating the mistakes of the past? I'm Matt Bevan, and this is If You're Listening. The modern Olympics has seen a lot of changes since it was first held in 1896. For example, early on, there were medals handed out for painting, sculpture, town planning, and medal design. Yes, medals for best medals. But despite a lot of change over the first 70 years of the Olympics, one thing remained the same. The Olympics was never about making money. The greatest advocate of all this was the head honcho of the Olympic movement.
The president of the International Olympic Committee, Mr. Avery Brundage.
Avery Brundage was an American former athlete filled with the zeal of Olympism.
We have only the strength of a great ideal. The games must go on.
For as long as the Olympics had existed, athletes were not allowed to make money, which meant that the Australian Olympic team all had other jobs.
Most of the swimmers were students, but all the athletes had full-time jobs, or most of them, and they had to try and fit in their training and their jobs, and, you know, they're just too much for them.
If people played sports professionally, they were banned from the Olympics. On top of that, the Olympic movement didn't want administrators, coaches, or event organisers making money either. Brundage even practiced what he preached. He never took a dollar of payment throughout his career as an athlete or an administrator. But in the 70s, more and more people were arguing that this was quite an elitist way to look at sport. It gives a massive advantage to sportspeople from wealthy families. It was also quite easy for countries to just get around if they wanted to. Communist countries routinely gave their athletes government jobs, which didn't require them to do any actual work, and allowed them to maintain a full-time training schedule.
Are the Olympics really still amateur sports?
I think only in name, except for the Australians and a few of the other smaller countries.
But Avery Brundage doubled down. He insisted that the Olympics should avoid any corporate connections. He thought that professional sports with big TV rights deals and sponsors weren't sports at all, and they were just an extension of the entertainment industry. Money for the Olympics should come from ticket sales, donations, and governments. He was convinced that vast amounts of corporate money would corrupt the Games and the IOC. He probably knew that it was a losing battle, but he didn't know how quickly it was all going to fall apart. In 1976, the IOC awarded the Summer Olympic Games to Montreal, Canada. The Games would be funded by selling tickets to the events, postage stamps, and commemorative coins.
Canadian Olympic coins, the most beautiful money can buy.
Montreal thought that sounded great. But at the time, Montreal thought everything sounded great. Even this song.
Hey friend, say friend, come on over.
Montreal was on a bit of a rebranding kick at the time, and this song is emblematic of the vibe that the city wanted to project to the rest of the world. I have listened to this song a number of times, and I hate it with the fire of a thousand suns.
Say friend, just come along.
driving force behind this hideous optimism was Montreal Mayor Jean Drapeau.
The man whose individual efforts gained for Montreal the 1976 Summer Olympics.
Jean Drapeau, a boisterous French-Canadian with a tiny little moustache, was seen as a man who could do no wrong, a man who made big promises and then delivered on those promises.
It was all nicknamed Drapeau's Dream.
He'd won two consecutive elections with more than 90% of the vote, a result you would expect in Moscow, not Montreal. Drapeau hired the famous Parisian architect Roger Talibert to design the centrepiece of the Olympic Park, three venues so close to each other they are in fact touching: the covered Olympic Stadium, the Olympic Pool, and the Velodrome.
It all began as an architect's vision that would make Montreal the greatest sports centre of the world.
It was an ambitious project.
The Velodrome, which will be air-conditioned, will seat between 7 and 10,000 people and has no interior supports.
The Velodrome was meant to look like a bicycle helmet, with six massive concrete arches holding up a phenomenally heavy roof. Next to it was the swimming pool, which was normal enough.
Work on the swimming centre is well advanced.
Except on top of it is the strangest tower you've ever seen, leaning over at a 45-degree angle.
Its triangular tower will rise 168 metres above the stadium, its base forming the main part of the centre's roof.
Why do you need a giant tower at a 45-degree angle? Well, it's designed like a pool umbrella. The tower leans over the top of the Olympic Stadium and holds up the stadium's retractable roof.
This opening will be covered during bad weather by an awning suspended from a tower on the swimming centre's roof.
The stadium itself was also a challenge.
Its main structural elements will be borne by 34 piers.
Many of the core concepts of the design had never been attempted before. All of this would be built on top of a brand new metro line for easy access.
The estimated cost was around $250 million, but no one was worried because these Olympics, after all, were going to be unique. They would pay for themselves.
$250 million was how much they expected to make by selling commemorative coins alone. Jean Drapeau famously declared that the Olympics can no more lose money than a man can have a baby. Sports Illustrated thought that the English translation of his name, Johnny Flagg, was more appropriate, given the used car salesman vibe that he gave off. As Drapeau admitted, there were some problems.
We've had problems, but I have followed the preparation of games in other countries. They always had their problems.
Yeah, but they didn't have problems like this. Almost everything that could go wrong did go wrong.
Drapeau's dream became known as his fantastic folly.
Talibert was constantly late with his designs. As construction began, they realised that the ground underneath the velodrome was too unstable to support the massive arches. This raised the cost of the concrete foundations by 1,400%. Water got into the holes in the stadium ribs and then froze, cracking the concrete. Corruption was rampant.
The contract was a sham.
From the politicians, to the contractors, to the unions. The construction companies and unions went to war over pay and conditions, both knowing that the hard deadline of the opening ceremony provided a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for a desperate government to shell out whatever they asked for.
Amidst the forest of cranes, everything now depends on the workers themselves.
Workers spent months on strike. The frenetic schedule when they weren't on strike led to the deaths of 12 workers.
By the end of last year, the overall games costs had risen to $1,000 million. It's now at $1,500 million and still going up.
Remember, the initial budget was $250 million. It was a global story. Montreal was a laughingstock around the world, and it was clear that the venues would not be finished. There were real concerns that the games would have to be cancelled. Eventually, the Quebec provincial government stepped in, took the job out of Johnny Flagg's hands, and started trying to fix the situation with fascinating doublespeak like this.
The stadium will be ready. I have not indicated that it will be complete, but it will be sufficiently ready for the holding of the games. We shall complete it afterwards.
Ready, but not complete. This could describe every project I've ever worked on. The opening ceremony was held in a venue that was still under construction. The tower meant to hold the retractable roof wasn't even half finished. Canada became the first country to fail to win a single gold medal at a Games they hosted. The cost of the Games was 13 times more than budgeted for.
It wasn't supposed to cost the Canadian taxpayers a penny, but it's become the biggest public works program in Canadian history.
Montreal was still paying off the debt via a tax on cigarette sales 30 years later. IOC President Avery Brundage wasn't there to see the Games. He died in 1975, leaving behind his wife, a German princess 48 years his junior, and two secret sons in Finland. But his death and the financial disaster in Montreal spelled the end of the Olympics as he had imagined them. The Games needed a total revamp. Brundage's greatest fear of the Olympics becoming part of the entertainment industry became reality. For the 1984 Games, the only bidder was Los Angeles, home of Hollywood. It was the 80s. It was America. And any semblance of Avery Brundage's amateurism and anti-materialism was abandoned.
Coke is the official soft drink of the Olympics. There are estimates it paid $80 million to get that title. Levi Strauss is listed as the official outfitter of the Games.
The Games were redesigned to maximize TV audiences for whichever broadcaster won the bidding war.
Television is the crux now of the Olympic Games. Olympic Games are predicated on television.
So there was heaps of money coming in. And also, as Ray Martin says here, heaps of work was already done.
Los Angeles actually has most of the sporting facilities and the accommodation necessary to stage the Olympics.
Los Angeles 1984 was run entirely without government money. Sports bodies began allowing professionals to play. Everyone was happy, and the Games made a handy profit. The Olympics had been saved, or perhaps more accurately, replaced by capitalism. Now, Avery Brundage was right about one thing. Letting in corporate money did lead to corruption in the IOC.
Buick is the official car. It donated money and free cars to the committee members.
Corruption became a serious issue in the IOC as cities around the world entered fierce bidding wars for hosting rights, often involving bribes to IOC officials. But bribes aside, the disaster of Montreal led to the success of Los Angeles. And for years after, the Games made more money than it lost. So, why is it that 40 years on, the Olympics is threatening to blow its budget in Brisbane? And it's not just Brisbane. Every Olympics since Sydney has run way over budget.
Hosting the Olympics creates a fiscal deficit of anywhere from 10 to 20 or 30 billion dollars.
You might have missed the reason. So I'll just rewind back to Ray Martin.
Los Angeles actually has most of the sporting facilities and the accommodation necessary to stage the Olympics.
It's because cities keep building new Olympic stadiums, and it costs too much money. Building massive infrastructure projects with an immovable deadline is fraught with danger. The revenue from sponsorship and TV rights disappears into the pockets of construction companies and the IOC. The Brisbane Olympics in 2032 planned to use existing venues, the Gabba, Lang Park, and venues from the 2018 Commonwealth Games in the Gold Coast.
Bringing down the cost of hosting the Games, allowing existing venues to be used.
But almost immediately it turned into a political quagmire, with plans for billion-dollar stadium upgrades or massive new venues being thrown around like confetti. Brisbane still has 8 years to sort the situation out. But if they can't find a way to run the Games without blowing the budget, the solution may be to park the Olympics in Los Angeles permanently. If You're Listening is written by me, Matt Bevan. Supervising producer is Yasmin Parry. Now, you may have noticed that there are a couple of trials going on in the US involving...
Hi, perhaps you recognize me. It's your favorite president.
One of them is the culmination of an 8-year saga, and the star witness is a man who has effectively destroyed his life to try and take down Donald Trump. Next week, the story of Michael Cohen, formerly Donald Trump's most loyal employee, who is now trying to get Trump thrown in jail. But can his testimony be trusted? And will the jury in the so-called hush money case believe him? That's next on If You're Listening.